All right, welcome to Crosstalk. Thank you so much for joining. We hope you like, subscribe if you like it, or if you don't, you know, we'd be happy for you to support us. We are a 501(c), and our goal is to raise money for people who need help and treatment and cannot afford to go. So we aren't affiliated with any spot in particular. So please, you know, if you like this, share it, subscribe, have other people subscribe, and really just watch. All right. Well, today I have a good friend, Jeanette. She's here to tell us her story. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
So here on Crosstalk, we just kind of go through like an experience, strength, and hope. Like, how'd you grow up? What happened? How did it all fall apart? You know, what were the culminating events? What did early recovery look like? How did you recover? What did that look like? And what does recovery look like now? So, you know, just take us through the evolution of Jeanette's life.
Sure. So you said it was an hour long. So I'll start from birth.
Yeah.
I'm pretty old. I'm in my 40s.
You're not from New York, are you?
No. I'm from Brooklyn. I was born and raised and bred in Brooklyn. I came from an awesome family, crazy, but in a good way. My parents are still married 50 years, actually 52 years now. I'm the youngest of three. My mom stayed home and raised me, my sister, and my brother, and my dad was the one, you know, out working all the time. And, you know, I got away with murder because I was the youngest of three. And by the time I came along, my mom was just like, let her do what she wants to do.
Same.
So like, you know, it was great.
Yeah.
So like I said, like, you know, growing up, I was always like, you know, getting good grades. I was on the swim team from second grade up until high school. So I was always athletic. My dad coached my soccer team. So like I said, I had an awesome upbringing. And I wish I had a part of my story to be like, this is what made me a drug addict. Like, I don't come from a traumatic past. Like, I don't have anything that scarred me that's what happened. You know, so I don't really have a story like that. And I remember, you know, I'm going to wind up skipping around because that's the way my brain works. But I remember when I first got into recovery, I was embarrassed to tell my story because I would hear all of, you know, these people and these survivors of like crazy stories like, wow, I can't believe they survived through that. And I didn't have that story, like, you know, and I remember I used to tell my sponsor, like, I'm embarrassed. Like, what do I say? I came from a great, you know, a great family and I still did drugs. And she was like, yes, Jeanette, because that's your story. I'm like, all right, no doubt. So I
feel the same way. In treatment, people would tell me, like, there was one guy who was a part of gangs who, like, dismembered a body. I'm like, I don't have trauma like that. What am I going to say? Like, my family lost everything when I was 16, you know, like, poor little rich girl type of thing. You know what I mean? Right. So I understand.
And I would never fit into a gang with my, you know, my blonde hair and my little, like, skinny, like, they wouldn't want me, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not part of my story.
You'd be surprised.
And it's funny too, because, well, not really funny, but I didn't really look at alcohol being a drug, but now being in recovery and having, like, you know, all these years clean, like, thinking back, like, that's a red flag.
Right.
I'm 12 years old, bike riding with one of my best friends in the daytime, and I'm filling up my little water bottle with straight vodka and getting blackout drunk, like, during the day. Cause
you could.
Yeah, why not? You know? And I used to replace the vodka in the cabinet with water. Like, my parents wouldn't know.
Right.
And I'm not saying, like, I want to blame them, but nobody ever came to me. So, in my mind, I got away with it. And again, it was alcohol, and it was always socially acceptable in my family, so I never looked at alcohol as a problem.
Right. Are you Italian?
I'm a mutt. I'm Irish, Italian, and Greek.
Okay.
And all of those are like big partiers and drinking, and like that's the family I come from. We always drank on the holidays, and it was always socially acceptable. And like I said, like both of my parents, like they're not drunks, but they drank on occasion, and why not, you know? Yeah. And it looked like fun. And you know, looking back now, when I was, well, at that time I was like in seventh grade, but once I got to high school and I drank with my friends, like we would drink in like the 40s in the schoolyard. And I was like the only one drinking to the point where I'd like pass out and black out.
Yeah.
And I don't remember any of my other friends like blacking out, like, you know, blacking out. You think after the first time you black out, you wouldn't want to do it again. I'm like, I can't wait to do that again, you know? Mm-hmm. But again, like, to me, that wasn't a problem because it was alcohol, socially acceptable. So I never thought that was a problem. And then once I got to like 14, the first drug I actually ever did was acid, which looking back too, like, that's not normal. Like, you know, usually kids dabble in, try some little pot. I'm like, yeah, let me try acid.
You'd be surprised. The past 3 days, I've heard a lot of first-time users use things like that. So,
and looking back, I'm like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Also, too, because I have like a 14-year-old nephew. So to like imagine a 14-year-old doing that, it's disturbing. Like, if I think of like the shit I did, if my nephews were doing that, like, lock them in a cage and don't let them out for like another 10 years. And again, like, I would pop acid and go to swim practice. And again, it was fun. Like, you know, and all through high school, I would always like dabble to like, because I had one of my best friends, her sister was like 16 years older and always introduced her to like the new drugs she was doing. Mm-hmm. So I wound up always trying my first drugs. My friend Jillian, who actually wound up passing away.
I'm sorry.
From an OD a couple of years ago, actually 10 years ago now. But it's like in a way, like I trusted her because she was like my older sister. So yeah. I always thought I was in like good hands. So like the first time I tried dust, it was with Jillian. First time I tried crack, it was with Jillian. And I never thought it was a big deal. Like, you know.
Right.
And like the crack too, she was like, do you want to try this? And it was like in like a wicker pipe. And I'm like, I don't know what that is, you know, because I always thought like crack in movies was like a crack pipe. And she was like, oh no, it's fine. And she put like this little screen on it and I'm watching her do it. And again, in my head, like I'm envisioning like crackheads from, you know, the movies and shit. I was like, I can't smoke crack right now. I'm like, all right, let me just try it. So I remember trying it with her. And it was crazy. It was like a rush and then it was gone. And, but I was like smart enough to be like, I can't do this. Like
right.
It literally lasted like 3 seconds. And I was like in my early 20s at this point. So I didn't think I really had that much of a problem, but I knew I wanted to stay away from that. And then like the club scene came around and I was going out, tripping on E every weekend. And I did like the E thing from like 18 to like 22. But again, the East, like, I wasn't only doing it when we went to clubs. Like, I was doing it straight from, like, Thursday to Sunday.
That was me, too.
And I never wanted it to end.
Yeah.
And I'd be, like, coming down off of a trip, and my friends were going home, and I was, like, eating Stack-A-Two and orange juice, like, just to, like, keep the trip going. Like,
right.
I never wanted it to stop. And then after, like, doing E for a couple of years, like, the come down was, like, such a nightmare. And, like, I was like, I can't do this anymore. So then I just started doing straight coke because I'm 23 years old now. I'm maturing, you know?
You're so young, though.
Right, but in my mind, you know? And it's so crazy, too, because, and I'll talk about that further down the line about, like, progression. My progression was so slow that I didn't really believe it, right? Because, like I said, like, I first tried acid at 14, and then, like, I dabbled. I tried, like, every drug for like 10 years, but never really got caught up bad in anything yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I started like doing coke, like thinking back when I was 18, I swore that I would never sniff anything up my nose because I have an adorable little Irish nose. Like I love my nose. And again,
I love that that's your reasoning.
100%. It's adorable. And I swore I would never put anything up it.
Right.
And until I did, and I'm like, oh, this is great. Like, I messed my nose up so bad, it's like quality of life. Like, I can't breathe. Like, I go like this, and I blow out, and like, no air comes out. Like, it's...
I've
so bad. So, like, when I started doing coke, again, it was, in my mind, it was never really a problem. I always had a job. I graduated high school with college with honors. But again, like all through college, I was high.
Yeah.
But,
so imagine how high functioning you would be if you were.
But again, like in my mind, like I was an English major. So smoking weed and writing a paper, like it helped me be creative. Like I guess I used it as an excuse.
Right, of course.
And then again, like in my mind up until I graduated college, like I was okay. Like I never even thought I had a problem. Because even when I knew it, like, I just when I think back and I know I was an addict, I never admitted in addiction, in active addiction, that I was an addict. I had a problem.
Right. No, I have a question. Did you go to school in New York, college, I mean?
Yeah, St. Francis in downtown Brooklyn. Okay. Thank God.
Okay.
I would have failed out if I was away.
100%. So you just, did you like live on your own?
My dad had to kindly ask me to move out when I was 30, and I moved my boyfriend and his kid in their house. So, no, I was very comfortable at my parents' house.
Okay, I love okay. that.
So at like 23, I graduated college. While I was in college, I started, you know, dating somebody. And, you know, that lasted probably about 2 years. And it was not the best relationship. And when I broke up with him, I was not doing good. Like, just heartbreak. It sucks.
Yeah.
And I don't like feeling. And the only thing I was able to remember, yeah, I have a thing with crystals.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, my fiance calls them rocks. But
have you seen my place? It's like all crystals. I have a huge one. I have a Buddha. I have the whole nine yards.
Yeah, so if you see me playing with it, it's just
so good.
An amethyst.
Yeah, I love it.
So, because like I just didn't want to feel, all I could think back to was being 18 years old, trying Xanax for the first time, and not remembering anything. Mm. And I'm like, I need that feeling back. So,
you're 23 and you're thinking, I remember that high.
So, I started dating him at 23. So, at this point, I'm probably approaching 26. So, I just turned 26.
And you remember that you wanted the high you had when you were 18?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because I remember at 18, it was one of the first times I tried Xanax. And I never really did Xanax that much. Mm-hmm. But I remember. We just did it, like, a bunch of girls, like, for the first time. And I remember falling asleep at, like, a red light. It was just a crazy experience. Yeah. And I remember not being able to remember or feel anything. And I just knew I needed that back. So I went out and I think I got like maybe 5 to start off with. Like, that should be a nice little band-aid and like get me through the week at least, you know? And thinking back and like taking that Xanax, I'm like, I can't believe I waited so long to take this. Like, it was exactly what I needed. And I was so happy that I found it. And I started taking Xanax and it made me feel better. And then in time, and like not even a lot of time, instead of taking half a stick, I needed a whole stick. And then as time went on, like one stick would get me through the day. And then like this, I would need to like wake up and take 2 sticks and then another like half a stick when I got to work and then half a stick for lunch. And then I think I was down. I was probably up to at least 4 sticks a day. And it was...
I'm just dying because I call them bars and you're calling them sticks. And I'm dying right now.
Yeah, hockey sticks. That's what I used to call them dealer to like cover it up. Like, are you playing hockey today?
Oh, really? Are you going to the bar tonight?
Yeah. I'd ask him if he's going to a hockey game. He's got
okay.
some hockey
How
sticks.
Funny. Oh, my God. So parents out there, hockey sticks, going to the bar, you know.
And I'm sure they're called like different things these days.
Oh, who knows?
Old.
God, who knows?
Fast forward about 9 months, and I was taking Xanax every single day, not skipping any days. I knew nothing. I wouldn't say I knew nothing about addiction, but I honestly, I may sound naive. I didn't think you can get addicted to pills. I didn't. I know that sounds very naive, but I didn't think you can get addicted to pills. Mm-hmm. Had no idea about withdrawal. No idea. I'm sitting at work. Mind you, I'm working at like a multi...
Was it easy for you to get, by the way? Like, I'm just, you know...
Oh, yeah. Because I smoked weed every day.
Yeah.
So I would ask my dealer, do you know anybody who has Xanax?
And they know.
And then it was just the one-stop shop who sold the weed, the Xanax, and the bananas, the Percocets.
Right.
And then I just wound up getting everything at the one-stop shop.
Okay.
But yeah, it was super easy to find.
I mean, you're in New York City, I
guess.
Yeah, so.
Brooklyn, a lot. So it was super easy to find on the streets. I'm sitting at work one day, and I worked in like a multi-million-dollar hedge fund with like suit and tie guys. It was like corporate finance on one side, sales and trading on the other side. And I'm like smack in the middle of like both departments. And
what do you do for them?
I was an assistant at the time.
Okay.
And I am like profusely like sweating and getting the chills and feeling like I'm literally gonna shit my pants. going to the bathroom, I stopped puking. And now, I mean, I am completely OCD, like, to the nth level. And I'm laying on the bathroom floor.
Oh.
Hysterical.
Even
crying.
My OCD exactly. just curled up. And I couldn't move. Mildly.
And I'm hysterical crying. I have no idea what's going on. I probably should have included that I didn't take Xanax for a couple of days because the dealer didn't have and I couldn't get.
Yeah. That's why I asked if it was because it got hard for me and that's why I withdrew. I had a seizure.
Yeah. So I didn't know anything about that. Yeah. So because I felt like I was dying, I went back to my desk and because exactly how I felt, I Googled dying and Xanax. And then all of this like shit came up about withdrawals.
Wow.
And I'm like, That's what's happening to me. So right there, instead of thinking, oh, wow, I need to get my shit together, what was the solution?
I would have
solution?
Thought I need to call my dealer. Yeah.
Exactly. So I got more as soon as I could, and I was back in business, and I felt fine, which was crazy because I was like, I can't believe as soon as I take this, I feel like myself again. Like that, to me, like that was myself.
I know. I've said that before.
And at this point, like I'm losing crazy weight and I wasn't a big girl to begin with. And I was never hungry because my diet literally consisted of like Xanax. And at this point I started taking Percocet. And I was just eating pills.
And you're what, 26?
That's actually what I was thinking about because I wound up getting into another relationship. So from 26, wow. So about 4 years. Mm-hmm. I can't even tell you about it because I was on Xanax.
Yeah.
I just know there was a lot of Vegas trips, a lot of Miami trips, and a lot of Xanax.
And a lot of blackouts.
And a lot of blackouts. And then.
Are you drinking at this point as well? Like, do you drink with it or
really?
No?
Okay. Not really. I was never...
So your opiets and Xanax, and that's your diet.
Well, Coke too. I mean, and that's when I would... Like, when I would drink, I needed Coke.
Right, of course.
Because I'm like, I feel like I can't hold my liquor, and Coke just made me
level-headed. Right, of course.
And then, like, when I would go out, like, I needed, like, a whole arsen. Because if I drank, I needed Coke. And if I did Coke, I needed Xanax. Because you need Xanax to go to sleep because you can't go to sleep on Coke. So you need
I never knew your story, but I feel like we're the same person at this point. Except I wasn't into any sort of opiates, which is
to me that
probably
was just a
why I am alive. You
to
know?
Me, that was just like a little sprinkle on everything else I was doing
right.
at that point. So then in my 30s, like I just turned 30 and I have scars on my knee from my 30th birthday. Like I literally ate concrete and... Thank God, my face was all cut open and bloody. And it's funny too, because I had on heels all night. I took my heels off and I put my Jordans on, and that's when I fell, when I was in my sneakers. So I still have like scars all over my knees for my 30th birthday. So yeah. And then a couple of months later, I wound up getting into my first relationship since that breakup. Because I swore after that breakup, I was never getting into a relationship again. I didn't want...
You stayed single for what, 4 years?
Yeah. That's
crazy.
A long time.
Yeah, that's a long time. I mean, I've done it, but it's a long time.
I didn't want to be with anybody, you know? And then I had, like, the sick, like, thing that I was doing. Like, I wouldn't, like, I would only mess with, like, guys in, like, their early 20s because I knew I couldn't get serious with them.
Right.
I'm like, what am I going to do with you? Like, read you a bedtime story? Like, like, it can't be serious, you know? So, like, that's how I played it safe.
Yeah, you've always liked younger guys.
You know? Not always. Like, that was just, like...
Yeah, your in-between phase.
So I wound up hooking up with somebody, I guess. I wound up hooking up with somebody, you know, that I grew up with, you know, that I actually knew from, like, my E era. And we wound up hooking up, getting into a relationship. Within a couple of months, like, we both discovered that we both take painkillers. And
Were you hiding it the whole time?
I wasn't hiding it. I just wasn't doing it in front of him.
Okay.
So I guess I was hiding it.
I would not do it in front of people, too. And I kept it all in my bag.
So
and
I can't remember, like, how we discovered that we both do them. But I'm like, oh, this is great. Like, now I have somebody to get high with, like, and be in a relationship with. Like, this is cool, right? That relationship was such a disaster. Like, such a disaster. Anyway, like, we were robbing from each other. It was so horrible. We were robbing pills from each other, robbing money from each other. It It was a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. This was the one that I moved into my father's house with his daughter at like 30 years old. And
my dad was like, you know,
and again, like I worked, I had great jobs through all of this. And finally at 30 years old, he was like, you know, you need to do something. And I'm like,
Did he steal from your parents?
No, he didn't.
Thank God.
And at that point, I don't think they knew how messed up we were. Cause we weren't even there for a year. And again, like I kind of hit it well. Actually, you know what? Before I started dating him, let me go back like a year before that. I was seeing somebody that I went to high school with, and this is how I really got heavy into opiates. I started seeing somebody that I knew from high school, and he sold blues. But I never took blues. I was a Percocet girl. So I would get Percocets off of him, but he would get them from somebody else. And then finally he was like, Jeanette, I don't understand why you, because I was taking 15 at the time a day. And he was like, I don't understand why you're taking 15 of these when you can take like so much less of these. I was like, and he was like, and it doesn't have the headache medicine in it. He's like, it won't like mess up your stomach as much. He's like, these are so much better. He's like, just take the blues. And I'm like, all right, no doubt, right?
Great advice.
So I remember taking one blue and I said to him, I'm like, this is such a waste. I was like, it's such a tiny pill. He was like, you ate it? He's like, you swallowed it? I'm like, yeah. He was like, you have to smoke it or sniff it. I'm like, oh, that makes sense, right? So,
oh my God, what a horrible person to meet.
So these are the guys that have been like lined up like in my addiction, you know?
It's like sick. It's like, you know.
Sick attracts sick, right?
Exactly.
So he wound up introducing me to blues and got me sniffing blues. So, you know, skip forward ahead when I started dating this, you know, this other guy. He didn't do blues. He did the Percocets and he knew where to get them. He got a good deal. So I'm like, oh, I'll just do them. As long as I was getting high, I didn't care, yeah. You know? And again, like they just weren't.
Doesn't Percocet have like Tylenol in it?
Yes, and that's what like messes
you up. Can't you like OD from too much?
It messes you up. Like it messes up your stomach lining and shit. And that's why the nice boy said, why are you taking this when you should be taking this? Like he was looking out.
Yeah, for your liver.
Yeah. So I remember like after a couple of months, like I said, I was like, you should see if you can get the little blue pills. I'm like, they're a lot better than these. And that's like when I said, I'll pick up to where I left off. That's like when like the robbing started, like we were robbing each other's drugs. Like it was just a nightmare.
Yeah.
And I wound up moving out, you know, after my father said, like, you know, you have to, you know, you guys got to get someplace on your own. The apartment right next door, the house right next door, they were renting the first floor. So I wound up moving right next door to my parents. So when I told my dad that I found a place right next door, he's like, you gotta be shitting me. I'm
right.
Like, yeah,
oh my God.
And again, it was like such chaos, like living with this guy.
So you were still there at your parents or
yeah,
no?
I'd go shopping literally with a bag and like take paper towels, food, because I wasn't making a lot of money.
And but you were spending your money
went on drugs.
Yeah.
By the time I got paid, like I owed the dealer for like that month of crediting me. And again, like I had a great job at this time. I got another job in 2012. I started at a private equity firm and it was a great job. And I would get high at work all the time. And
at this point, you're snorting blue pills.
Smoking
blue pills.
I used to go to the bathroom. And again, in my mind, like thinking back, that like disgusting. Like I was sniffing blues off the toilet bowl at work.
Oh my God.
it's a multi-million dollar like private equity firm. And this is what their employees are doing in the bed. Well, not their employees, their employee.
Well, I'm sure you are not the only one, may I just say, if it's a private equity firm in New York. And you're not worried about like your nose looking funny or nothing. Okay.
No. And I would go back to my desk and nod and just face plant. And my manager would be like, Jeanette, you have to stop sleeping at your desk.
Oh my God.
Wow. Like, it's crazy. Mind you, I lost this job when I had, like, a year clean. I'm like, how'd you keep me for 5 years nodding at my desk? Now I'm like, well, go. I mean, that's another whole story in itself. But yeah, it was just complete chaos, like looking back. Complete chaos. And again, like I'm still with the same dude.
It's so funny when we're in the chaos and it just keeps like, it's like keep it rolling.
Like I never, and even like I would know like if I was getting like carried away and I'd be like, oh, I need to slow down a little bit. And I would.
I could.
But the crazy thing is that like I got used to the, like the withdrawals and withdrawing and like stopping and starting all over again. Like I would get clean for 2 weeks. And then withdraw and be like, all right, I stayed clean for 2 weeks. Now I deserve to do
a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I lived like that for years. It's so crazy to think back at that, you know, and so wild. So I remember
I'm sure there's so many people who can relate to that, like withdrawing and starting and stopping a million times.
And again, like it was normal for me. And like thinking back to them, I remember I found, I don't even know what it was. It was a green pill. But I knew it was something good because he had it stashed on top of our like cabinets where I could never
reach. Did you not Google it?
No, I just ate it. But the craziest thing is that I ate it at night. And then the next morning when I went to work, I passed out in the subway station, like on the wall. And I came to and I was in the subway, like leaning against the wall. And I'm like, wow, this is getting crazy, right?
Yeah.
I can't stop. But that was like one thing that like really stuck out in my mind. Like, this is a wild way to live, right? So we're in like 2016 now and still living my life, doing the same shit I've been doing for years. Still so deep into Xanax.
So you're working still for this private equity firm?
Yes.
And they don't know?
How could you
not? Or they didn't care. They didn't care. You were good at your job.
First of all, like, I was gray. Mm-hmm. Like I look like a walking corpse.
Me too.
My clothes didn't fit me because I weighed nothing.
So what was the culminating event? Like this is 2016, so we're getting close to the ends.
Yep.
Because I know you and I are close.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was November 17th, 2016. That was my clean date. So it was the weekend of Halloween of 2016, and I was a little sick. But I'm like, great, let me take like full advantage of this, right? So I went to the doctor, coughing, like, you know, and I was getting pills from my doctor too. He was giving me Xanax.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So he wound up giving me something that begins with an H, like Xanax's cousin, but not as strong as Xanax.
I only know, anyway, it doesn't matter.
No, not Klonopin.
Right. It doesn't matter like, anyway.
Halcyon or something. I don't know.
Who cares?
Exactly. But it was a benzo and got me high. So I got some of that. I got scissor, which I was so excited about.
Never done it.
It's the codeine.
I don't need to know.
Mm-mm. So when he gave me that, and that was like hard to get.
I don't
want to
know anymore anything. Come on, don't tell me.
And what I say, in my mind, I'm like, this is going to be an awesome weekend. I got shit-faced the whole weekend.
Yeah.
On Monday, when I woke up and I went to work, I'm like, I really need to take it easy. Because like I would get like Xanax in bulk. And it would kind of last me half of the week. And when I got my regular like pickup and I finished it the whole weekend on top of everything else the doctor gave me, I'm like, this is getting crazy. I was like, I need to slow down, right?
Yeah.
The usual shit that I used to do, you know, that I'm used to doing. So I was like, I'm not going to pick up for a little bit. I'm not going to get high for a little bit.
Yeah, right.
So I went in, I'm working, and I opened my drawer, and with my paper clips is one Xanax stick. I'm like, I might as well take it and start tomorrow, right? So I took the stick, and by the time I got home, because I was on so much stuff, like I started like feeling like, oh, I'm gonna start feeling like shit tomorrow. Again, like I went to work and I wasn't withdrawing yet, but like it felt like an out-of-body experience. Like it kind of felt like I was tripping on acid. Like it felt like I was there, but not really there. And like my limbs were like detached. And it was a crazy fucking feeling. And I don't know what happened after that. I wound up having a grand mal seizure and falling out onto my desk at work.
Oh, shit.
And again, like you said, you had a seizure. I never had a seizure. And I was taking
Xanax. I hadn't either.
For over
till I took that.
10 years. For over 10 years, I was taking Xanax.
I don't know. If someone else said the grand mal seizure. Is that what it's called?
Grand mal.
Grand Mall?
M-A-L.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I had that kind of seizure, yeah. But I had a seizure. I was, anyway, a lot of Xanax. I know. I took myself off it and then took my dog's Tramadol.
Right. So I figured since I went off of Xanax.
More, you know.
So much and it never happened. It would never happen to me. Because I did it so many times. Like, why did it happen that time?
So you're in the hospital.
They rushed me to the hospital. My brother and my mother wound up coming because my brother was a fireman in Brooklyn at the time. He wound up coming. My mother wound up coming. I wound up having a seizure again in front of them.
Oof.
So now they're doing like all these brain scans and I'm like, I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, this is serious. Like, this is really serious.
Yeah.
So now my mother's beside herself because she thinks that there's something wrong with my brain.
They don't realize that you're on all this stuff.
Yeah.
Did they do a tox?
Well, the jig was up.
Yeah.
The doctor cleared out my mom and he was like, are you on anything? I was like, I've been on a lot of things.
Yeah. You know? You were honest with the doctor?
Because I knew it was going to come out. Like, you know, so I'm like, I was like.
Everything.
Yeah. So my mother winds up coming back in and I'm like, you know, Ma, I have a problem. And she was like, all right. She was like, we'll fix it. And I'm like, all right, no doubt. Cool. We'll fix it. Yeah, my parents are super supportive.
Yeah.
So at this point, it's November 1st. That's the day that I had my seizure. And I remember being on the, like after I woke up from my second seizure, the doctor asked me my name, who the president was. And I knew all the answers. And he was like, do you know today's date? I'm like, yes, it's All Saints Day. So he looked at my mother, and it was All Saints Day. It was November 1st.
Oh, wow.
So my mother looked at the doctor, like, oh, she went to Catholic school her whole life. So that was kind of funny. So, like, they kind of figured out that, like, you know, my brain was intact. I was just, you know, withdrawal. Again, like, things are so choppy now. I remember they put me in outpatient.
A detox?
They detoxed me. Straight from, like,
yeah, I was gonna say, was like, you need to be detoxed.
I'm glad you remember that because I didn't. Yeah, they kept me overnight, they detoxed me with Ativan. I don't remember anything,
yeah.
And I think, like, after that, I had a follow up with like the psych in outpatient, and I told her, like, I ate all the pills, I need more. She's like, that's not the way it works.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, what are they thinking? Come on.
You're sending a junkie home with pills and telling them to detox yourself.
Come on, exactly.
Yeah. I don't know how, but I wound up getting more pills and my mother wound up having to dish them out to me. By this point, they had to know how bad I was. I mean, I just got out of the hospital. I'm still getting pills. Like, so they had to know that, like, she's a mess. They wanted me to stay with them for a little bit. She wound up, like, paying off my dealer. She asked me, she's like, you know, do you owe anybody money? Like, I had my mother, like, meeting the dealer for me to pay him off.
Wow, that's nice.
What a disaster, man. What a disaster. So I was still smoking weed. I told her I was not going to stop smoking weed. Like, I need something right now. She was like, you need to do something. She was like, you know, this isn't going to be my daughter. And I'm like, she was like, I want you to reach out. One of our family friends has been in recovery. Like, we know her. She knew me since I was born. She's like, I want you to reach out, you know, to Mary, whatever. And I want you to go to a meeting with her. And I'm like, give me time. I will. So probably like 2 more weeks went by. And I was like, let me just, like, you know, finish smoking what I have. And because, like, you know, I wouldn't pick up dimes. I'd pick up weight. And I finished smoking. And I wound up reaching out, and she was already in the loop of what was going on with me. I was like, you know, I think I'm ready to come to a meeting with you. She was like, I think that's great. She was like, I'll meet you when you get out of work today, because I still kept my job. So I went to my first meeting. She was actually the speaker. It was on step 12, which is a little intimidating. But she's, like, such a spiritual, like, she has, like, the softest voice. And, like, just, I'm like, this is cool, like, you know? And I went with her from, like, my next 2 meetings, and by, I think, my 3rd meeting, she was like, all right. She's like, now you do this on your own. I'm like, what? I'm like, uh-uh. And she was like, you know, somebody's expecting you. Like, I was right around the corner from a meeting, and she was good friends with the chairperson, and she was like, her name is Donna, and she's going to be waiting for you. So I'm like, great. Now I have to go because I have eyes on me. Long story short, I went. I'm still super close with the chair that I met that day. She's coming to my wedding. She's like one of my biggest supporters.
I can't wait.
And she's old. She's like in her 60s, but she's one of my best friends.
Yeah.
And I couldn't imagine doing recovery without her. So I wound up going to that meeting by myself. And like, because my sponsor was so much older and introduced me to basically her support, I had all the old timers like literally like sweeping me up.
I love that. That's the best.
Because I've seen, you know, young girls like struggle coming in, like, you know, and it was such an awesome experience. Like the love that they showed me and the support that they showed me.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So,
and this is like a 12-step program.
Yeah. Just
so
Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah.
It was Narcotics Anonymous.
So you're in Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah. And I love it.
You're meeting amazing people.
I love it. And
was it hard? So you never went to rehab.
I never went to rehab. I never struggled in my beginning day. Like everything was so easy. I'm like, I don't understand why these people come in and cry and complain like, oh, it can be so hard. Like it's fucking cake. Like it's cake. So I wind up breaking up with that guy. Ooh, I hit the mic. Mm-hmm. I can't stop moving. So I wind up breaking up with that guy I was with.
Yeah.
So we wind up moving back into my parents' house.
Oh, Lord.
Because I wind up cheating on him. Actually, I didn't cheat on him. I met somebody in the meeting.
Yeah.
Our beginning, like the feelings he gave me are like the dumb, giddy feelings you get in high school that you know you'll never get again.
Right.
Because it's that little butterfly type of love. You
right.
know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And when I got that in my 30s, I was like, there's no way I'm passing this up. Like, I'm running with this.
Yeah.
At this point, my mother wound up getting a puppy, breaking her shoulder, and my father had hip replacement. So I go back to them. I was like, Mom, I got a great idea. How about me and Frankie move back in here and we'll help you with the puppy and the shoulder and the hip? And she's like, oh, that's great. I was like, by the way, I'm breaking up with Frankie. I can't be with him anymore. So we moved back into their house. I probably broke up with Frankie like a month later. Mm-hmm. Mind you, like, he had issues, but he had a good heart. And I know he loved me, but I can't stay with you just because you love me and I don't want to hurt you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, listen, I was like, I can't be with you anymore. And I broke this kid's heart. I know I did. I know I did. And I wound up taking up with the chef. And he had a rocky, rocky beginning. He couldn't get clean, you know? But again, like, you know, he would be clean and then not be clean. But I don't know. We just had a crazy connection.
Yeah.
Everybody's telling me stay
away
from
you. Oh, they're judging
you.
I'm sure
you. You know, stay away
from
him.
You have Judge Judy in every corner.
It was absurd.
Yeah.
Absolutely absurd.
I mean, I would have been judging you. I'm going to
But eventually.
Not anymore. Now that I'm like more sober.
Yeah, but
when I was
eventually,
young.
Eventually, he got clean and he got the shot. So it's not like I was just with a crazy using addict. He got clean.
Yeah.
But he wasn't really down with NA. He didn't want it.
Yeah.
But we still had a great relationship. Like we truly loved each other and, you know, we were going to see where it took us, you know? So he moved in with me
at your parents?
No. I moved out. Oh. I missed that part.
Oh, that's okay.
After I broke up with Frankie, that was the coolest thing too. Cause I was going to say, I wasn't working at this time. I wound up tapping out of my 401k that my father, who's an accountant, strongly advised against.
Oh, I'm sure.
But I'm like, Daddy, no, I'm going to do this and I'm going to move to the beach with my new boyfriend.
Oh, my God.
And that's what I did. So.
Your sponsor must have been like, I don't. Okay.
Oh, she thought I was losing my mind. So my sponsor became this woman that took me to my first meeting because we just had a connection. Like, I couldn't imagine it being anybody else. So we had a great relationship. It was so much fun. He started working in the industry again and, you know, started with a drink. Then he did coke and he was like, I don't like coke.
Yeah.
And that's how fast that happened.
Yeah.
And he wound up like getting
You're always
like,
searching
really,
for the high you want.
He wound up getting like really fucked up again and like our relationship was over. Like, that's it. It was over. Like, you know, in the process, I wound up changing my sponsor too, who I love more than anything.
So what does early recovery look like? You just, or is this like,
at this point,
is this like kind of the crazy beginning? Like,
no, because at this point, like I had coming up on 3 years. So it's not even like that early.
Yeah.
You know, like I have some recovery in me, you know?
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why I knew I couldn't be with him, because I did believe, like, how could it work out or using Addict living with you, you know?
No, right.
So I wound up changing sponsors in the process too, because I couldn't get honest with her. So instead of getting honest with her, I was like, oh, I'll just go get a new sponsor.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
And I did that.
Yeah.
So we probably broke up very, very beginning of August. He was back in my apartment by mid-September.
Yeah, August. What date? What year is this? That feeling.
2019.
2019.
Because of that,
so
you know,
right,
that,
before COVID.
Yeah, because of that heartache, you know, the why I took Xanax the first time. I knew I couldn't take Xanax, and I didn't want to feel. And I really, really was sad. Like, I was really freaking sad. Like, I really was. Like, thinking back, like, if I hear a song that I listened to then, like, I could literally, and he's my fiance today.
Yeah.
But I could literally cry, like, thinking back, like, how fucking sad I was in that moment. Like, you know, just thinking about him, what he was doing, like, you know, because I knew what his life turned into, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember, like, being at a meeting and just being, like, I was hysterical crying. And, you know, they say, like, you know, pray for the other person.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can't fucking pray for him. I can't, I hate him. And, like, my thoughts were so ugly. I was like, I wish he would drive a spike through his arm and kill himself.
Oh my God.
And just like fucking die and take, like, and just like, rather than him walking around and me knowing that he's like still living, let me mourn his death. Like, that's where my mind went. Like, it was so ugly. It was so bad. And then, you know, one day I did go home and I just prayed, and because I didn't want to have those ugly thoughts, because I still did love him, you know?
Yeah,
and I prayed and I'm like, you know, God, just do whatever you see fit, you know, because I don't know, like, you know, what God sees for him. And I'm just, you know, just do whatever you see fit. And we wound up getting back in touch, because we would have like those sporadic, like,
how
just
are
checking
you?
On you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would get him like Uber Eats. I wouldn't put cash in his hand, but I would get him like Uber Eats and like hotel room. Just, I needed to know he was okay, you know? And then it started like, all right, you can come back, but you're sleeping on the floor. Like, I can't have you in my bed.
Yeah, okay.
And, like, I heard he was so bad. And then, like, when I saw him, he didn't look that bad. You know, he still looked like my Petey, but not really. He did need a shower and he haircut. But, like, he didn't look what my mind made up to be, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're sleeping on the floor. By the second night, he was in my bed. And
so COVID hasn't hit yet?
No.
So what does this look like? Does he get sober, or is that when you?
I mean, he had plans. He wanted to.
Oh, right. Of course.
He wanted
to. Listen.
And I'm coming up on 3 years, and, you know, he would go to detox, come out and use again. And, I think it was like the second time he was in detox. I don't know how I wound up in his drawer, but I wound up in his drawer and I found like a stash of, Suboxone. Mm. And I'm talking about a stash. I never took Suboxone ever in my life.
Yeah.
I wound up Googling it. You could get high from it. I took it.
And you had
this
how
was
long?
October, like the end of October. I was coming up on 3 years in November.
Yeah.
So the moment I took that Suboxone with the intent, like, I'm getting high from this. And once I did get high, I knew I relapsed.
Yeah.
I didn't tell anybody. I didn't talk about it. I continued to celebrate.
Did you tell? You celebrated? Ooh,
yeah.
Okay.
He came out of detox going crazy. He was like, where's my Suboxone? And me, I'm in recovery and I didn't want to lie. So I told him I got rid of it, because I did. I took it. So I told him I got rid of it. He wasn't happy. And I didn't even tell him I took it. So I celebrated because my parents were coming in from Jersey and they were bringing the dog. So it would be like, you know, a great day. And in my mind, like, I already set up my relapse, my real relapse, because I knew I already relapsed, but my relapse wasn't going to be over Suboxone. It was going to be a relapse. Mm-hmm. So I celebrated, and I went to one meeting between November 17th and December 2nd,
mm-hmm.
Because I already knew I was out.
Yeah.
Like, I already checked out. And I remember being with him, and I told him I was going to smoke weed, and he was like, don't Because he knew, like, my mind wasn't right.
Yeah.
And he was like, wait for your mind to get right before you make... Because he knows about the program. He knows about recovery. He grew up in the room.
Who is this?
The chef.
Oh, yeah. No. Okay. No, I meant, like, who's telling you, wait...
The chef.
Wait, can we go back a second?
I told him I wanted to smoke weed. I told him I wanted to smoke weed.
Oh, you talk.
And he was like,
I spaced.
He's like, wait until like your mind wait until your mind clears before you make a decision to freaking get high. You have 3 years clean. Because he didn't know I already took the Suboxone.
Yeah, yeah.
Mind you, the second he turned his back, I picked up his pen and I hit the, you know, I hit his weed pen. Since we gotta get this going. I already knew I relapsed, so the next day I'm already at work, and I couldn't wait to get home to smoke weed.
Of course.
So everything that I questioned in the beginning of my recovery, like, slapped me in the face. Like, the progression, the way, like, it picked up, I texted him at work, and I'm like, no, I think I waited to get home, and I'm like, I want Xanax. He's like, I'm not getting you Xanax. He's like, just smoke the weed. And I was like, no, I want Xanax. And I was like, if you don't get me the Xanax, I'm going to get it, and you're not going to like where I get it from. I wound up getting Xanax from him. And and he's high at this point. And the way, like, I started taking the Xanax, I didn't take Xanax for 3 years. He was like, whoa. He's like, what are you doing? And I was like, what? Like, he knew that this was not going to be fun. Because
that's what I hear is, like, when you relapse, you kind of
pick up where you left off. That, like, it was wild. I probably could have taken half. And
so now let's fast forward. You two are using together,
mm-hmm.
clearly. And when do you...
This is only day two.
Right. But when do you decide to get sober again?
So on day three, I started calling out of work. I put my whole paycheck in his... I paid my rent. I put the rest of my paycheck in his hands. And I'm like, go out and get everything and anything you can get. Because I heard that, like, a belly full of drugs and a head full of NA doesn't work out good. So my goal was to get as fucked up as I could. He came back with literally everything. 2 days later, I was ODing.
And then?
I went to the hospital. He convinced me to leave. I didn't need it. So I ripped the IVs out. And this is the part that scared the shit out of me. He convinced me to leave the hospital. We go back to my apartment. He winds up falling asleep. And I wound up cleaning and finishing all the drugs I could find on the table. And to me, that was like, you just ODed. You know, I had to get Narcan 4 times, and I'm still looking to get high. He winds up waking up.
That's so insane, right?
Insane. And yeah. That's the part that scared me. Not the OD, but that I was still looking to get high after the OD. He wakes up, and he's like, where's the bags? I'm like, what bags? They were empty. I threw them out. There was more heroin.
Gaslighter.
That wasn't my thing. So I thought they were empty bags.
Oh.
So he wound up taking them all out of the trash, and which was another like God moment, because if they were there, like this time I would have finished it.
Yeah.
And this time I would have been dead because he was sleeping. Oh, yeah. I didn't tell that part. Like, he was the one who had to like give me chest compressions until the medics got that. He's the one who called 911. Yeah,
this is during COVID.
No, right before.
Right, yeah, because I was gonna say you'd be stuck forever.
This is
in the
beginning of December. Oh my God, I never even thought about that. That's terrifying. Yeah.
What?
You said you would have been stuck in the hospital. Yeah, I never even thought about that.
Oh my God, you would have or not gotten any help.
Yeah.
Period.
So that Monday, I woke up and I knew that like if I didn't get to a meeting at that second, like I'm gonna die. Like I never thought like in that moment, like I never, you know, people say like, oh, that'll never happen to me. It'll never happen to me. Like I knew I was going to die. Like I didn't even question it. I knew I was going to be the dead addict.
So you went to a meeting and what about, did you break up with him or you decide?
He got clean and I wound up relapsing again and he has 20 more days than me. So I'm coming up on 5 years. And he's coming up on 5 years. My clean date is December 29th and his is December 9th.
I
wound up finding like one pill.
So now you're about to enter COVID. Thank God you two both are clean. Like by the skin of your neck, you're clean for COVID. Because I believe COVID would have killed me.
Yeah.
And it sounds like COVID would have killed you.
because even getting clean and early COVID, like it was so rough. That can be
so hard.
So, you know, how I said, you know, the early recovery was like a piece of cake. What are these people crying about? Like, it's so easy. Like, what is there to cry about, right? Everything that I questioned in my first, like, coming in, like, totally slapped me upside my head. My early days after my relapse were so hard. I did not want to be alive. I did not want to be in the rooms again. I did not want to be clean again. I struggled. I struggled a lot.
Why didn't you want to be clean again? What was, you know, was it
I think a lot of it had to do with ego.
Yeah.
I was really proud of my 3 years. Really proud of it. Like, my clean time was something nobody could take from me except myself. Like, I was really proud of that. And I held on to that. Like, you know, like, that was something to be really proud of.
Was it hard also, like, to be sponsored again? Where, like, I already know this stuff?
No, not so much, because it's, I mean, to me, it's a repetitive program anyway, you know? But again, I think it was a lot of the ego stuff that I couldn't put to the side. Because before my relapse, I used to raise my hand, and in my shares, I used to kind of talk like cocky in a sense, like, oh yeah, if I was to ever relapse, I'm never coming back. I'll never be that girl one day back saying, I'm Jeanette, and I have one day. It's not going to be my story. God was like, yeah,
oh,
we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see, because there's only two choices, and, you know, get back to the meetings or die.
Yeah.
And the life I created in recovery was so beautiful. It sounds corny, like life beyond my wildest dreams. Like, yes, I'm not riding mega yachts, but I never thought I could be clean, you know? So living without drugs and being happy, like, that is life beyond my wildest dreams.
Same. That's what I'm trying to tell people. I mean, listen, I do well, and I've built up a great career for myself, and I live well and all that. However, the what I enjoy the most is, like, the peace of mind.
Right.
And
no chaos.
Oh.
Being in a relationship where the both of us are clean, like, I never had that. Like, you know, so it's like that was my first relationship clean.
Yeah.
Doing things together that we never did with anybody else clean. Like, that's special. Like, you know? And like I said, like, I loved my life.
So what did sobriety now look like?
Well, now it looks great because I'm coming up on 5 years.
I know, but I'm talking about when you first got back. Were you doing, like, meetings every day? Like, what did it look like?
I was doing meetings every day for about 3 months, every single day. And then the world shut down. And I needed a meeting every single day. So we started, like, this renegade, like, rogue meeting.
Oh, we did too.
On the boardwalk.
In the parking lot.
Yeah, in the boardwalk in Coney Island. It was about five of us, and it grew into something so big and so beautiful. And it's still a meeting today, which was awesome. And, you know, thank God for that, because I needed it. I needed it. I needed the support. I needed the meetings. And like I said, like, I didn't want to be clean in the beginning. Like, it was a struggle getting back, you know? And I struggled too with, like, why did God keep me alive? Because just the week alone that I OD'd, I probably knew, like, two or three other people who OD'd and died. So I had a problem with that. Like, why did God keep me alive? It was all about me. Like, you know, I felt really bad for myself. And then one day I'm in a meeting and somebody was sharing from the floor. And I've heard this expression before, but it wasn't until that guy said it that I was like, whoa, that's why I'm alive. And all he said is, God gives you what you could handle. And at that moment, I thought of my mother. And I'm like, my mother wouldn't be able to bury her baby. Like, some people, I got goosebumps. Like, some people, like, in recovery, like, 30 years clean, buried three kids, and, like, they have the tools, and, like, I'm not saying they're not hurt, but they have, like, the survival mechanisms, and they get through it. I truly believe that my mother, like, would fucking crumble, you know? And at that moment, I believe God kept me alive, not for myself, but for my mother. And little by little, like, a lot had to do with my fiance. Like, you know, I saw him finally getting it and finally trying. And I'm like, how am I going to be so selfish this time around when he is finally, you know, putting his all into recovery and step work and men's groups? Like, I really saw such a change in him. So he was...
Did you think, like, well, if he can do it, I can?
No.
Because I know your fiance. And honestly, like, when he told me he was sober, I was like, holy shit.
I didn't think that. But it's funny that you said that. He's that way, and that I feel like that's why he holds on to his clean time, because, like, in a way, he feels like he's beating me because he has those 20 extra days than me because I relapsed again. So, like, he thinks that, like, you know, he has more clean time than me now. But what gets me is that I would be coming up on 8 years clean.
Oh, but who cares?
I know, but it's still like a gut punch. But again, if I kept that clean time, would I be living in Florida? Would he have gotten clean?
But that's what I want to know the most.
So I don't regret my relapse. I don't recommend it, but I don't regret it. And it gave me such a new set of eyes and appreciation for life and recovery and acceptance.
I love that.
You know, like,
tell me this because, okay, I can't even imagine trying to get sober during COVID. That's number one. But number two, what I really want to talk to you about is, like, you both decided to move here. Mm-hmm. And I remember when you moved here, you told me, hey, like, we're trying to look for these 12-step meetings. You know, where should we go? And I was like, oh, well, let me tell you what I've heard is that you're not going to find that same 12-step meeting that you went to up north down here. You're going to have to switch brands, kind of thing. And I remember you guys were like, no way, we're not switching brands and we're not going to redo this stuff. So tell me, what is it? Did you switch? Like, what?
I didn't switch. It's been such a struggle. I have the same sponsor that I work with in New York. I have the same support network that I'm still in contact with. They're all coming to my wedding in November from New York.
Well, I know you always are talking about them. And
but the recovery in Florida, like,
that's,
I don't know.
It's so funny that you say that. Everyone else who's been on the show talks about how amazing the recovery is down here, and that's because you go to the wrong brand.
Absolutely, because when I walked into my first NA meeting down here, I had years, you know? So if you want to welcome me, welcome me. At the end of the day, I'm here so I don't die.
Yeah.
I'm not here to make friends.
Yeah.
If I was a newcomer and I walked into the first meeting that I went to and was treated the way I was treated, like, I just moved down here. Like,
yeah,
my sponsor would get on me, like, go welcome the newcomer.
Yeah,
like, you know,
course. That's
and
what you
we
do.
Were not welcomed. So and it just left such like a taste in my mouth. Like, I don't.
So do you go
these
to
aren't
meetings?
My people. Huh?
Yeah. Do you go to meetings?
I'll hop onto a Brooklyn Zoom meeting.
Yeah, you do. Because the way you feel about your recovery group, like NA up north.
New York recovery is like.
But that's how I feel about AA down here. And people say, hands down, AA down here doesn't exist anywhere else. And that's what's crazy to me. I still wish you could have that experience because you would be welcomed in the meetings I go to like crazy. So you didn't let that deter you, though.
No, because, I mean, we did find meetings that we, you know, I did try other meetings and we found meetings that, you know, we did like, and I kept returning to that, and I'll go to that meeting, like, you know, every once in a while, definitely not as much as I should be going.
So what do you do today that keeps you sober?
I pray.
Yeah.
I pray. Like, that is my most important relationship today, is my relationship with my higher power.
And what about, you know, like, I know in the program I do, it's like a lot working with others. Like sponsoring and things like that.
Well, I don't really sponsor people because I don't even have a sponsor down here. So it's like, you know, it's hard, you know.
Do you want that? Do
not
you think
really.
You need that?
So, like, yes. I think I need it, but I don't want it. It's just more responsibility. And I'm not really looking for responsibility at the moment.
Okay.
You'll probably cut this part out.
We should. Let's go back. I'm not going to ask you that question. Even though it's your story and I love
children.
You.
I don't want responsibility.
So let's cut that end out. So, but you have found meetings that you do go do down here, but then you also, you know, hop on these Zoom calls.
Yes.
Okay.
And then I feel at home, you know, I feel at home when I'm on one of those meetings. And like I said, I'm still in touch with I still have my same sponsor that I had in New York. I can't imagine being with anybody else.
Yeah. And you have your relationship with God or your higher power,
and
or
like
whatever.
You know, it sounds corny, but you know, leading up to my relapse, they say grateful addicts don't use, right?
Right.
And that was my biggest downfall. I wasn't grateful; like I had a miserable attitude, and I remain grateful today. And you know, when I pray, like I don't even ask for things. I say thank you.
I know.
Thank you.
I know.
You know, I don't really ask for anything. I don't, you know? So, same. Like, my most important relationship is with my higher power, the relationship I have with myself, and then everything else just falls into line, like, you know, just falls into line.
That's beautiful. I love that.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for showing up.
Yeah.
And I ask everyone the same question, so you have to answer. So, if you could go back in time and tell a younger version of yourself, so it doesn't have to be, like, preschool Jeanette. It could be 30-year-old Jeanette. It could be any age you want.
I wouldn't change anything in my story.
But would you tell yourself something? Would you give yourself a message? Would you go back and tell the younger Jeanette something?
I don't know, because that might have changed my path. Yeah. And I wouldn't want anything about my life different than it is today. Because if I go back and tell my old self, like, walk a straight line, I wouldn't be with my fiance today.
I love that. Well, thank you so much. And now we're going to hug.
Okay.
Okay.
I love your outfit, by the way.